Reverend Dr. Spiwo Qapile. He is the minister of JL Zwane Presbyterian Church in Guguletu. And when he arrived there, I don't know if it was 12, 15 years ago, it was a small, struggling church with a ramshackle building. And he transformed that church in the last 12, 15 years into something unrecognizable from what it was before. They developed the JL Zwane Center, which is next to the church, but is a community center that's independently run and has the most incredible programs. They have an afternoon school where hundreds of kids come. They give them lunch, and then they have extra lessons. They employ, I'm not sure how many teachers, but quite a number of teachers who give the children extra lessons. They have a feeding program for those people suffering from HIV/AIDS, where, again, every day they feed hundreds of people. They have a hospice, which goes out into the community and cares with volunteer home care workers. They have a leadership development training. And they have Siaya, who do ministry through song, dance, and theater as well, educating people in schools and hospitals through the medium of entertainment, but with a message. And Bongani writes all the music for that and directs their skits and plays. So they do incredible work. So I want to ask Spiwo to come forward. And I'm going to hand over to him. And what he's going to share is on the reformation of the African child. We were talking this morning about identity. I think a lot of what we were talking about was identity, and a lot of that starts in childhood. And so he's going to informally share with us and get us talking about what needs to change in terms of the African child. Thanks, Spiwo.
Thank you very much. There are a number of things that are going through my mind. As I attempt to position myself well for this dialogue. And I think I will be just throwing some ideas and statements that I will not be necessarily following, hoping that when we find time, either today or a space tomorrow, we knit together some of the things. I usually think a person, by definition, is a cluster of memories of the past, realities of the present, and expectations of the future. And you need to have come to terms with the past to make sense of the present and have direction for where you want to be and how you want to position yourself in relation to the future. I need to also just acknowledge the work that has been done by Amahora and actually commend what you have been doing over the years for a reason. I think the kind of ministry that I've been involved in, believe you me, is a very lonely ministry. Once you step out of the conventional, the norm, as it is called by my denomination, you suddenly find yourself on your own. You lose colleagues, you lose people that are close to you, And sometimes you lose members of the congregation because they will say, this is not how this congregation has always been run. And we don't want to be involved in HIV/AIDS issue. Let them die. All those things, it becomes a very lonely journey. And when I've been told this afternoon that there have been people out there doing so many things as you've been doing, I tell you, had I not aligned myself with the Iona community in Scotland and some other groups elsewhere, I don't think I would have survived up to today. Because there were times when I was at the point of giving up and actually wondering if there was nothing wrong with me. As we engage in this ministry, I want to say to you again, we've got to use memories of the past as a redemptive memory. We've got to remember who we are and where we come from. But use that memory, as Mr. Mandela would say, to make sure that what we have seen never happens again. We have a duty as a church to push young people not to allow a situation when the informal settlements of Alexandra, of Guguletu, of Soweto, and the deteriorating conditions under which they live, high unemployment rate, poverty, to bring them down. We've got to be very encouraging as the church so that they decide every day to see and to understand life beyond the present. If you can't see far, you can't get far. And I think somehow we have fallen into the trap of telling and retelling problem-saturated stories, without really committing to crafting and repositioning ourselves in order that we may begin a new direction. And I want to say, you can read the evangelical witness, which was a response of some churches, evangelical churches and so on, to apartheid, and read the Kairos document and so on and so on, and want to understand, have churches really moved from words into action? In spite of the documents we've produced of commitment is doing what you promised to do long after the mood you promised it in has left you. Are we able as Amahoro? Are we able as people here to make sure that when you leave this space into the most disturbed spaces of this country and of other countries? I'm one of the bin twos. I got the what you call the name in Kenya too, and this has been President Mbeki's downfall. I've been to Kenya, I've been to the Cameroon, I've been to Uganda, we refer to those people as bin twos, who are doing very little at home to make a difference. Mr. Mbeki learned his lessons from that. And we are here now. And we are wrestling in South Africa, and this is why I was suggesting to Marius that we would have to bring this debate to the floor, the transformation of the child, the African child. And after a debate that I had with members of CIA, only 3 out of those members actually has mom and dad. The rest were brought up by single parents. And I want to tell you something that you don't know, Marius. The majority of members, of ministers in my denomination, the majority, a high percentage of leaders, ministers in my denomination are people that grew up not knowing who their dads are. It will not be the next 20 years before the church in the world and in South Africa is led by children who grew up in orphanages. Those are the children that will take over the work that we are doing now. They are in Orange Farm, brought up by very dedicated Christian women who are doing that without any support or with very little support from churches. I want to share with you some of the things that have been disturbing when I started my work in Guguletu. I realized that a number of people in Guguletu were not committing to marriage life at all because they did not know about family, where there was mom and dad because of the migratory labor system in South Africa, which destroyed the family unit. And I want to tell you that I sat with a situation where I sat down, actually. Over a number of years, I had baptized over 2,000 children in that church. But I had had less than 20 marriages in that church. And I bet if you were to speak to members of CIA here and ask them, 20 years, they are 21, 22, 23, and ask, we said a marriage where, you know, people get married before they have children. We say in this country it's a white wedding. Ask them how many white weddings they have seen in their lives. It doesn't happen in Cape Town. Doesn't happen in my area. And you are talking about transforming the African child. How do you begin to do that? Because I want to say the involvement of the church in the development of the child is very minimal. We baptize children still in church. And I ask questions to the parents. Do you commit to bringing up these children in a Christian way? And so on and so on and so on. They usually respond to that. But the last question is directed to the congregation. Do you, as members of JL Zwane, commit to supporting these children in, and I'll say, show that by standing up. The whole congregation usually stands without thinking. In no time, the parents have died of HIV and AIDS. And what is the practical response expected from the congregation to make sure that those children are brought up? I realized that when I was discussing this, or when I was, you know, raising this, a number of members of CIA that I spoke with, and numbers of people that I spoke with, a lot of young people there have never had time with their fathers to just sit down with dad and have a conversation with dad. They have traveled the world. They've been to the United States many times, you know, visited African places and countries and so on. And I asked them, before you came here, you know, did dad show any interest and so on? actually know and actually he never asked and so on. It is within some of our communities that even for fathers to sit down and they expect the church to do what is not happening at home. And what are we doing? And are we really able to deal with those situations? And I'm trying to say here, the family has a very important role to play in the formation of the child. And if we are to prepare children, not for today only, but for tomorrow, not only for the world too, but also for the leadership of the church, because these are young people that at the end of the day will be dealing with some of these situations. How is our commitment and how much are we putting into making sure that these things happen? I need to say here, I also am one of those people who do not believe that it helps the situation to always, as I say, see reasons why it won't happen or it cannot happen. I also believe that we have to plant a seed. It doesn't matter how small, but it grows big. We have to find openings. We have to find opportunities. We have to find ways of beginning somewhere. We must be found doing something. We must be found, you know, and involved in the doing of something. As churches, we've got to be more, you know, practical about it. Must be word become flesh. And when I looked at the situation in Kuklet, as I say, and around me, I don't think I would have started had I not taken courage from the doctrine that we all know, creatio ex nihilo, a God who creates out of nothing. And I think when we look at nothingness, when we look at depressing situations, we should always be reminded of who sends us into those situations. We are never alone as a church. We've got to be involved as a church in making, and I really want to say, let's talk and let's talk. Some of those young people were saying, we've not found ourselves really responding appropriately to some of the situations in our, communities because of even the teaching we receive from the churches. The sort of teaching we receive from the churches was such that we should not be concerned about this world, but the other world. And when we go and get involved with other young people in other situations, we feel we don't fit yet because of how we have been conditioned. And this is why sometimes I really feel, honestly, Africans have to look at ways of bringing up children in a way that really befits the African child too. And Africans, I want to repeat this, Africans should never, never, never attempt to swallow Western theology without being critical of that. We've got to apply a hermeneutic of suspicion whenever we listen to Western theological constructs. We've got to read the Bible with African mind. I mean, I read that story. I'm Xhosa speaking, by the way. I tend to think in Xhosa before I say a word in English. Sometimes if I keep quiet, don't think I'm passing out. I'm looking for an English word. Quick, passage. You look at the situation of, you know, that man who had been sick for 38 years. You remember that? And who had nobody to throw him into the pool when the angel had come to disturb. It would never have taken place in Africa. Never. I don't believe that story. That someone can be there for 38 years without a neighbor, without a friend, without people that are less sick that would say, all right, let it be his turn, gentlemen, today. You know, we are not as sick as he is. Let's really wait for the angel to disturb them, and then we throw it. But Africans would have found a solution to that. It would never have happened. I don't believe that story. And when I look at biblical stories and look at them and critique those stories as an African, I have to come up with African solutions to, you know, the scriptures. Why don't we begin to deconstruct, you know, the Jesus of Nazareth narrative? And include our children in doing that. And around that, work a way where we are addressing what we are saying. And we as Africans can address issues that missionaries could not address for fear of being seen as against the culture. There are lots of things that are wrong with our own cultures. But we have more authority to actually deal with those issues. And as I say, I'm trying to put this, the context where I think, you know, as African theologians, as churches, as African Christians, we have to critique our situation. We have to critique the presentation as we have always received it. We have to, there's nothing wrong, honestly, about, you know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer's, you know, Christ in Community and so on. And there's nothing wrong with all these, you know, attempts to, we can read from them, but for heaven's sake, I don't want to be a Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I want to be myself in my own situation. And I think we've got to really, as churches, do something to that. I'm not sure, Marius, in terms of time, because I thought, you know, what we could do is just, you know, to just, you know, go into groups and just share, you know, within the group the struggles that you know of your own upbringing and what the challenges were. You know, some of the young people said to me, I think if I can actually go back home and say to my father when I get home, Dada, ndiyakuthanda, he would honestly think I am mad. If he would go back home and say, Daddy, I love you, Daddy would really find, you know, some psychiatrist to actually deal with that. Because culture does not allow that. In a way, it is not done. If they would go home and say, Mommy, I love you, it's even it would be acceptable, by the way, if he says it in English. It's not as heavy as saying it in Xhosa, Mama, ndiyakuthanda. I tell you, Mom would be in trouble with that. And that has to do with the, how do we actually influence that in such a way that, you know, we bring up young men and young women who are not encouraged to be on the wrong side of things, but to be included. They were saying, you know, churches, it's not strange that churches don't involve little children and young in decision-making situations, because even at home, decisions are made without them. At Jelzwane as a church, we have you know, the session which has elders and so on. We struggle to make it a point that we should never have a session of elders we have without associates who are representatives of the community, whether they are Muslim, whether they are Jewish, whether they are atheists or not. But we should allow within the highest structure of the congregation, in terms of church governments, dialogue with our own community. Because we want to hear our own community telling us that you are irrelevant. You are not responding to the issues that you should be responding to.
Yeah, maybe just to add to what you've said. Yeah, let's give him a round of applause. Thank you. I think in discussing that, I think literally just in 2-3 people, in small groups, not just to talk about the suffering or the painful memories of your youth, what you've experienced, but to ask the question, what stuck in my mind from the first day is if you don't, what's the word, if you about the suffering? If you don't transform suffering, you transmit it. So ask yourself the question, the pain and suffering from my own upbringing, and especially in an African context, violence and abuse, that may be physical violence, but it could be psychological violence. It could be religious abuse. The ways in which you have been wounded from your own childhood. In what ways have you been able to transform and redeem your own painful memories so that you have not transmitted them to your children? Or if you don't have kids yet, what is there from your own painful memories that you don't want to transmit to your children, but that needs needs transformation, that needs redemption? So let's take a good, I think it's 9 o'clock now. Let's give ourselves half an hour, just to sit in groups of 2 and 3. Okay.